Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 here in Chicago with a live studio audience. Wow, those sound like a live studio audience who have permits to drive.
Woo! Yeah.
Yes, they do. Okay, took our first test drive with our twins. Please have us in mind. No, they're great. They are fantastic. Very proud of them. And they make a wonderful live studio audience. We had an incredible Shabbaton. Shabbos in the city with the Project 613. Just incredible people came. You know, if you build it, they will come, right? So we go downtown once a month to bring the magic of Shabbos. We bring our homemade challah from the various members of the community. Store-bought challah just is not good enough. We want to recreate the magic of Shabbos here in West Rogers Park and bring it down to downtown Chicago. Also, incredible families come along with us. Particular shout-out to the Shkup family. Absolutely incredible. So thankful that they are part of what we are doing here. All right. And just incredible inspiration. And that is what we do here at Project 613. So thank you all for listening. And thank you all for all of your support as always. All right. Now, we are going to go to a topic that is well known. One of the most, I would say, popular or at least well known stories in the Bible, Sodom and Gomorrah. All right, these were the wicked, evil cities that were destroyed. In fact, there were really a group of five cities, of which the Torah tells us four of them were destroyed. The fifth one, so are the smallest and quote-unquote newest one, was spared as an accession to Lot. But I get ahead of myself. Now, if you ask most people walking down the street, is the story of Sodom and Gomorrah real? Did it happen? Well, I guess really honestly, it depends where where the street is. If it's in the heart of Bible-thumping Midwest America, then I think you would get a lot of yeses. But if you go elsewhere, the average guy or gal on the street, they'd say, well, it's a parable and it didn't really happen. And it's actually very interesting, and I can't spend the whole podcast or even a major chunk of it on the archaeology, but boy, oh boy, there is a ton of evidence that this was no mere coinkydink or no mere myth, that it actually happened, all right? So there have been cities that have been found near the Dead Sea area. First of all, with a massive amount, a huge amount of up to 500,000 graves, meaning to have a city with 500,000 graves indicates it's been there for a long time, and there's a lot of people who live there, okay? And so if you go to the Dead Sea now, and the whole Dead Sea area on both the west and east sides, you're going to see, you know, destruction and salt and sulfur. And but the archaeology has several distinct cities in that region that have major cemeteries. Well, and around the time of the story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So the question is, how do you create a cemetery there if there wasn't major metropolises? And that's basically what the Torah says. The Torah says, also the Talmud, that they were incredibly wealthy. This was the wealthiest, most lush area in possibly in the entire Middle East. And that's why Lot initially wanted to settle there. Lot is the nephew of Abraham. And when they parted ways, Lot was influenced positively by Abraham, but still had a greedy streak to him and saw the luscious area of Lot. And even though the people weren't so reputable, he still ended up going there. Now, and so that makes sense. All right. So also, what's amazing is that they found an incredible diversity of agricultural products like really from all types of fruits, vegetables, very high-end stuff that only a very wealthy culture would have access to in that area. Okay? Now, it also, they found a trade route that concurs with the Bible, that they had trade to the Far East, and it was a major center of wealth. Okay, now, but what's really unbelievable and incredible is the destruction. They have found layers of burnt ash and sulfur-like stuff in many, many of these cities around the area. And they've dated it right back to the time of when this story happened. And it's absolutely incredible. I've looked up a few articles, and one of them said that they found the skeletons were, and I'll quote, most of the bones found had been shattered into small pieces and mixed into a matrix of pulverized mud bricks. The individuals represented by the bones were violently torn apart by a powerful explosion, leaving only a few hand and foot bones still articulated and unbroken. The circumstances and condition of the human bones and fragments suggest that at the moment of death, these individuals were going about normal activities when they were struck. So you're talking about a cataclysmic end to a major, very wealthy population, which absolutely concurs and corroborates what's going on at the Torah. Okay, so we don't have time to do an entire thing, but look around. H.com has some, AISH.com has some fascinating articles as well. And these are legit archaeologists working on this stuff. Fascinating. So when anyone haughty, say like a college professor, like the ones that I studied with, say that, oh, this is all just made up, maybe, just maybe, we look at the facts and see what happens. Because honestly, there's more of an archaeological case that it did happen than it didn't happen. Okay, so that's just some fun facts over there about the history of it. Now let's move on. What was Sodom and Gomorrah? What was, now in we'll call them Sodom and Gomorrah, but in Hebrew we call them Sodom v'Amorah. They're, you know, but we'll use the English. What was so terrible about these places? There were a lot of bad actors, quote unquote, in the Torah. So what made Sodom and Gomorrah particularly awful? Okay, and the very way we can frame this is by talking about just a little bit about the beginning of the Torah portion and then contrast it with how the Sodomites and Gomorrahites, we'll just call them Sodomites in the meantime, for clarity, how they behaved. So at the beginning of the Torah portion, Abraham, who had just had the procedure of his circumcision 3 days after his circumcision, was waiting at the edge of his tent. Why? Because he wanted guests. As my Rebbe of blessed memory, Rev Moshe Chayitz Zatzal, says, that he was in more spiritual pain, the fact that he could not host, than he was in physical pain from having undergone a circumcision at the age of 99 years old. That means that he and Sarah were dedicated fully and completely to being givers, to being people of chesed. And that is the ABC 1, 2, 3 of the Jewish people. We are givers. And that is the how our Torah portion begins. And then Abraham and Lot had already separated, and Lot ends up in a place called Sodom. And Avraham is now, in this last week's parsha, is appointed the minister of the world. He is the one who is going to represent all of mankind. And therefore, when God then decides, because of that, to reveal his plans to Abraham, to Avraham, to destroy Sodom, he says, I have to do that because Avraham's going to represent humanity. Avraham then gets in a back and forth defending the Sodomites, saying, if there's a certain amount of righteous people in the city, will you save the city, God? And God says yes, and he starts negotiating. This is like Middle Eastern shuk, 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. And at 10, that was the minimum offer. that they both knew would go. 10 is a minion quorum. That's for a different time. But at 10, that was the least amount of people that could save 5 cities. It turns out there weren't even 10 righteous people in the 5 cities. They had all become so wicked and so inculcated with taking and all of its outcomes that sealed their fate. But let's go into a little bit about what the specifics were of their crime. Ta-da! So the way to frame that is actually in Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos is the Ethics of Our Fathers, which is a Mishnah, a series attracted in the Mishnah, which is basically the Jewish greatest Jewish hits of ethical wisdom. And in chapter 5, Mishnah 13, there is an unbelievable Mishnah, and it talks about different qualities and character traits of different people. And it says, Arba Midos Ba'adam, there are 4 character types among people. Ha'omer, those who say, Sheli Sheli, V'shelcha Shelach, Zu Mida Benini. So what does it mean? What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. Now, does that sound bad? And the first opinion of the Mishnah says, yeah, that's a Mida Benini. That's a mid-range. That's okay. That's average. Not great. Not terrible. Okay, V'yeshamim, but there's another opinion that says when someone says what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, shocking, fasten your seatbelts, it says Zu Midasdom. This is the character trait and characteristic of Sodom. Sodom and Gomorrah. What? What's mine is mine, it's yours is yours? Okay, just for clarity, the Mishnah continues, says Shali Shalach V'Shalach Shali. You know, if Karl Marx would have read this, if he would have been learned at all in Judaism, he never would have proposed communism, because the next line is a communism thought. It says, what's mine is yours and what's yours is mine. There's no personal ownership. Says the Mishnah, Am Haaretz, he's an ignorant fool. He's an ignorant fool. So Karl Marx was an ignorant fool for proposing what he did. And if he wouldn't have had an assimilated, converted father to Christianity, then maybe the world would have been saved millions and millions of deaths under the hand of communism. If someone would have taught him Pirkei Avos, they would have destroyed his entire ideology. Okay, end rant. Here we go. The Mishnah continues. Shali Shalach, what's mine is yours. V'shelcha Shalach, and what's yours is yours. Chassid, that's a righteous person, a pious person, meaning everything's yours. And Shalach, Shali, what's yours is mine. V'shali, Shali, and what's mine is mine. Rasha, that is a wicked person. Okay, so what is so bad about this? What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. At first, maybe not much, but what happened in Sodom is it became enshrined in law to the point that having guests was forbidden. You could not have guests. Why? Because what was going to happen? It was a very wealthy area. If people start coming, then you're going to have guests. Then you're going to have poor people. And then you're going to come asking for money. And then pretty soon, you know what's going to happen? The towns are going to be overridden by poor people and people who need things. And we're going to lose all of our money because it's all about me. What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. Starts off innocuous, but can potentially end up cruel. To the certain point, I want to tell you how depraved the city of Sodom was. And this is a Gemara in Sanhedrin. We're going on a little tour of the Mishnah, the Torah, the Mishnah, and the Talmud in this Monday Motivation. Very exciting. So the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Talmud says on page 109b, in Sanhedrin, one of the tractates that deals with Jewish courts and laws, Havia Hahi Revisa. There was a certain young maiden, Dahava Kamafka Rifta La'anya Bachatzba. It's nice to hear Aramaic, right? On a Monday morning? Isn't it awesome to hear Aramaic from the Talmud? Well, any day of the week. But what happened? This young maiden would bring out bread to the poor in her pitcher. In other words, she was hiding the fact that she was bringing bread out to the poor people. She hid it in her pitcher. So instead of water in her pitcher, there was bread there. Igloi Milsa. It was discovered by the Sodomites. Shifuya Duvsha. Listen to the cruelty. They smeared her with honey. V'ukmua al Egar Shura. They placed her on the top of the city wall. Asa ziburi va'achlua, that honey attracted bees, and they literally devoured her, stung her to death. This is the end of a selfish attitude. And this is what the verse says. Vayomer Hashem. Hashem said, Zaakas Sodomah Va'orah Ki Rabbah. I have heard the outcry of Sodom and Amorah, Sodom and Gomorrah, Ki Rabbah, because it is great. And Rabbah is a play on words with the young, word for young a lady. Va'amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Al Iske Riva, on the issue and the matter of the maiden, of this maiden. So you can imagine the cruelty of what is going on over here, that it was forbidden to have gas to the extent that it was a capital crime. And we see here a few things. First of all, Avraham as leader of the world, still, even though they were heinous, still defended them to see that potentially, if there were righteous people, that those righteous people should be saved. And there was really only a handful, Lot and his daughters, and they, in fact, were the ones who were saved. Famous story. Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt. Why? Because the angels told her not to look back. And she looked back to see the destruction. And since she didn't really merit of herself to be saved, she was only saved in the merit of Lot, that she was turned into a pillar of salt. Why? Because she begrudgingly let Lot host guests. But when Lot would ask for salt, she would say, sorry. It's enough that you have guests over. You want actually to give them salt as well? And so measure for measure, she was turned into a pillar of salt. Now, when you go to Israel, you will have many tour guides, and they will tell you that this rock over here, this is the wife of Lot, who turned into a pillar of salt. Well, I've been on many tours over there, and there are at least 5 to 10 different places where the tour guides say is the where she turned into a pillar of salt. So we don't know exactly where it was, but I am sure for a small price, the Israeli tour guides will tell you, especially now, unfortunately, because tourism is down. Okay, folks. So the title of this podcast is called Sodom and Gomorrah Then and Now. So what does this have to do with us? Because the Torah, everything the Torah writes is eternal. It's for us. And this is really the challenge of our culture. America is a very wealthy culture. Now, I know that not everyone is wealthy. But I don't know about you, but the beggars at the intersections, they all have iPhones. Okay, I mean, it's true. I'm not disparaging them, but the panhandlers and everyone, even they have iPhones. And if they don't have iPhones, they have Androids. Okay, we live in a very, very, very wealthy culture, and the question is, how much are we tapped in to being givers like Abraham, like Abraham and Sarah, who dedicated their lives to giving to others, who are the founding pillars of our people, and we are their direct descendants, physically and spiritually? Are we giving enough? Are we giving to the point of self-sacrifice, of saying it may not be comfortable, but I'm going to help the person, even if it is difficult? How do I say this? This past Shabbos, sometimes the Shabbatons just roll. They were just easy. We had so many technical challenges. Thank God we were able to overcome each and every one of them. But it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. And I felt it was God's gift to us that we, in the same week that Abraham taught us that hosting people has to be done even to the point of self-sacrifice, that we had the blessing and opportunity to host amazing Jewish young professionals, even when many technical things did not go our way, and we had to fight for every single bit of the success of this Shabbos, and it was a tremendous blessing. So I think this is an opportunity for all of us to introspect. How often do we host other people? How often do we host Jews? How often do we host a Torah class? maybe there's a rabbi out there that you could help and say, you know, rabbi, why don't I bring 10 of my friends and we'll have a class in my living room? Or how many people, and I keep harping on this because I think this is so true, how many people have listened to me and established a tzedakah account that when ADP rolls off your paycheck in direct deposit into your bank, that 90% of your post-tax is going to go to you and 10% is going to go into your charity account. And then you can start giving money generously. That'd be amazing. Wouldn't that be something that Avram would love? And I could go on. And how many Jewish institutions need volunteers? I mean, okay. How many hours of sports can we all watch over the weekends? You know, like maybe how about before kickoff? Could we go volunteer at a Jewish food bank for an hour? Could we do that? Wouldn't that be amazing? Have the rest of the day. Listen, I'm a biggest fan of sports, as you'll find out there. Okay, but maybe, just maybe, there's a way that we can take a lesson from Avraham Avinu's playbook and a lesson from how not to do it from the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, and to become true givers, to push us to the next level of giving of ourselves, giving of resources, to become a true link, a true spiritual link in the chain of Abraham and Sarah, that they started 3,800 years ago. God willing, with their inspiration and our aversion of the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, may it motivate us to be truly, truly giving people. God bless. Have an amazing week. And we look forward to seeing you again, God willing, right back here next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation.